morning, everyone. Shabbat shalom. How's everyone this week? Well, okay. Good. It's good not to have a camera looking at us. That's what I think. It's so bad when it's put a camera out, I start acting all strange. And singing out of tune for a change, too, because I never do that. What are you laughing at, Sonny? All right. So it's good that Eric is here today. And it's lovely to come together, focus our minds on the Lord, those prayers directing our thoughts, and also open up the Word of God and looking at what the Word of God has for us again this week. And we are in the Parasha Balak in Numbers chapter 22, right up to chapter 25, verse 9. And today I also would like to do a reading from Micah chapter 5, verse 6 to as well. We're going to do the Haftarah reading too, and later we'll read from Revelations chapter 2. Okay. Let us all read this together, if you can see it. Then, it's a bit small, isn't it? Who would like to come and read it? Noah, would you come and read this for us? No? Karen, would you come and read this? Should we? Can you see it from there?
Yep.
Okay.
Then the angel of Adonai stood on the road where it became narrow, as it passed among the vineyards, and had stone walls on both sides.
The donkey saw that the angel... Let's read together. The donkey saw that the angel of Adonai and pushed up against the wall, crushing Balaam's foot against the wall. So he beat it again. The angel of Adonai moved ahead and stood in a place so tight that there was no room to turn either right or left. Again the donkey saw the angel of Adonai and lay down under Balaam, which made him so angry that he hit the donkey with his stick. But Adonai enabled the donkey to speak, and it said to Balaam, "What have I done to you to make you beat me these three times?" Balaam said to the donkey, "It's because you've been making a fool of me, and I will kill you on the spot." The donkey said to Balaam, "I'm your donkey, right? You've ridden me all your life, right? Have I ever treated you like this before?" "No," he admitted. Then Adonai opened Balaam's eyes so that he could see the angel of Adonai standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand, and he bowed his head and fell on his face. It's quite a... It makes you laugh every time you read it. It's one of those humorous scriptures. And let's also read Micah chapter 6, verses 5 to 9. "My people, just remember what Balak the king of Moab had planned, what Balaam the son of Beor answered him, and what happened between Shittim and Gilgal, so that you will understand the saving deeds of Adonai. With what can I come before Adonai to bow down before God on high? Should I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves in their first year? Would Adonai take delight in thousands of rams with 10,000 rivers of olive oil? Could I give my firstborn to pay for my crimes, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? Human being, you have already been told what is good, what Adonai demands of you, no more than to act justly, love grace, and walk in purity with your God. The voice of Adonai, he calls to the city, and it is in wisdom to fear your name. Listen to the rod and to him who commissioned it." All right, so this is a Torah portion or a drush that I've given before. So if you don't remember it, that's good. If you do remember it, that's also good, because now we can make sure we learn it even more. So let's just first do the Hebrew together for the actual beginning of the parasha, which is in Numbers 22, verses 2 to 3. Let's read together. "Vayah Balak ben Zippor et kol asher asa Yisrael la'imori Vayaga Moav, Mipne Ha'am Meod, Kirav Hu, Vayakats Moav, Mipne Bnei Israel. Okay, all of you who are studying Hebrew, you're going to be getting better and better all the time. All right, so let's look at the story. So we have Balak, who is the king of the Moabites, and he asks Balaam, a non-Israelite sorcerer, or kind of a seer or a kind of prophet of some kind, a pagan prophet, to put a curse on Israel. Balak was concerned that the children of Israel were so numerous and had successfully, of course, wrought Jericho when they came into the promised land. Of course, Jericho fell to the Israelites, and so fear of the Israelites was spreading right across the land of Canaan. And so Balak hoped that Balaam would curse the Israelites and allow the Moabites, therefore, to be victorious in their battle against the Israelites. So Balaam, before he goes to curse the children of Israel, seeks an answer from God. Now, this is interesting. He's a pagan prophet, and yet he seeks an answer from Adonai. And in the Hebrew, it's not just Adonai. It is, in fact, the ineffable sacred name of God in the scriptures. He seeks of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, of God's name that we don't know exactly how to pronounce, perhaps Yahweh. And God tells him not to curse the Israelites because they are blessed, and does not want to go, and he does not want Balak to go with his emissaries to curse Israel. After several entreaties from Balak, along with permission from God, eventually then Balaam goes along the way and has on his way this very interesting encounter between God's angel, the angel of the Lord, Balaam, and his donkey. And so his journey ends at a mountaintop where he sees from a distance the children of Israel encamped. And from this vantage point, Balaam proceeds to bless Israel four times. In Numbers chapter 23, 7 to 8, and again 18 to 24, and then chapter 24, 3 to 9, and verses again 15 to 24. And actually, the words that Balaam speaks are some of the most wonderful prayers that we still use today, and we have actually used in our service already this morning. For instance, let's read some of them. Numbers chapter 23, how can I curse those whom God has not cursed? How can I denounce those whom the Lord has not denounced? Beautiful words. Numbers 23, verse 19. God is not a man that he should lie, nor a son of man that he should change his mind. Does he speak and then not act? Does he promise and not fulfill? Beautiful, isn't it? You can dwell on some of these words. It's interesting. This comes from the mouth of a pagan sorcerer, in a sense. And then the one that we have used at the beginning of our services, Numbers 24, verse 5. How beautiful are your tents, O Jacob, your dwelling places, O Israel. Numbers 24, 8. God brought them out of Egypt. They have the strength of a wild ox. They devour hostile nations and break their bones in pieces, and with their arrows they pierce them. And Numbers 24, 9, like a lion they crouch and lie down, like a lioness who dares to rouse them. May those who bless you be blessed, and those who curse you be cursed. Does that sound familiar? Well, this is exactly what was happening in this instance here. I mean, Balaam wanted a curse, but he could only bring forth blessing. This is, of course, a fulfillment, and this is a reference, of course, to the Abrahamic covenant. Where God said to Abraham, I'll bless those who bless you, and I'll curse those who curse you, and through your seed all the nations of the earth will be blessed. And in Numbers 24:17, I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob, A scepter will rise out of Israel. He will crush the foreheads of Moab, the skulls of all the sons of Sheth. Well, if you were the king of Moab, you wouldn't be very happy with these words. And actually, this is also seen as a kind of a veiled reference to the Messiah. A star will come out of Jacob. A star will come out of Jacob. Just interestingly, by way on the side, is that after the time of Yeshua, there was a time of rebellion against Rome around 125 AD, led by a general who was Bar Kokhba, a Jewish general who led a revolt against Rome. And Rabbi Akiva, one of the great sages of the Jewish people, believed that Bar Kokhba was the Messiah, because the name Bar Kokhba means son of a star. And he referred to this verse. A star will come out of Jacob. And so Jewish people rallied behind Bar Kokhba and the revolt against the Romans, which was eventually crushed by the Romans very severely. And many, many Jews died. Jerusalem was completely leveled to the ground this time again. And the Romans changed the name of Jerusalem from Jerusalem to Aelia Capitolina, named after the emperor's wife, I think it is. And so that was an interesting time when Israel was led to follow a false Messiah. This is less than 100 years after the time of Yeshua. Son of a star, it says here, a star will come out of Jacob. Anyway, interestingly, just to, again, on the side, since I've never mentioned this before, it was at this time that there was a very strong separation between the Messianic Jews and the Jewish community. Messianic Jews still at this time were still attending synagogues and really trying to be still part of the Jewish community. But because of this schism, the Messianic Jews did not actually follow in the revolt against with Bar Kokhba, because they knew he was a false Messiah. They knew Yeshua was the Messiah, so they did not join the forces, and it was always held against them that they were traitors for not joining the cause. And that kind of is one of the earlier moments in history where there was a very clear schism between Messianic Jews and the rest of the Jewish community, and where the idea of Messianic Jews being meshumud, or traitors, meshumudim. Anyway, let's move on. First Fruits of Zion do a very nice Torah drush on this, and it's entitled Never Argue with a Donkey, which I think is probably a good advice. And so as Balaam set out from Moab, God was very angry because he was going. And that's, of course, because, you know, God did eventually grant him permission to go, but God didn't really want him to go. And so in Numbers 22, verse 20, God really said to Balaam, yes, okay. He relented. You can go. So why was he angry? Well, the Lord knew what was in Balaam's heart. He knew that despite all his exterior piety, Balaam was after, of course, a payout. He was going to get paid. He was like a mercenary prophet. He was going to get paid to curse Israel. And so in our story, we read of how the angel of the Lord, and by the way, the angel of the Lord is a moment when the angel of the Lord appears. It's a appearing of the pre-incarnate Messiah, the Messiah before he came to earth in the flesh. It's often very interesting, the encounters between the angel of the Lord and the people that speak to the angel. Because sometimes they speak to the angel, and sometimes they are speaking as if they're speaking to God himself. And so the angel of the Lord blocked Balaam's path three times. Each time Balaam didn't see the angel, but the donkey did. The three incidents correspond to Balaam's three attempts to curse Israel as well in Numbers 23 and 24. In these chapters, Balaam attempts to utter a curse over the people of Israel three times, but each time the Lord stood in his way, so to speak, to change his curse into a blessing. Ironically, Ironically, Balaam referred to himself as the man whose eyes is open in Numbers 24:4, and also as the man who knows the knowledge of the Most High, who sees the vision of the Almighty, having his eyes uncovered in Numbers 24:15-16, but he couldn't see the angel of the Lord. And his donkey, therefore, could see better than he could. The man who sees clearly the vision of the Almighty with his eyes open didn't see what the donkey saw. The donkey had a better vision of God than Balaam did. The donkey had deeper spiritual insight than Balaam. And so the angel of the Lord blocked Balaam's path three times. The unseen angel with the sword in his hand stood only a few paces ahead, and on the third occasion, Balaam assaulted his donkey with a stick. And when the donkey rebuked him, Balaam said, "If there had been a sword in my hand, I would have killed you by now." Now, there's an interesting reference to this in the commentaries and the paraphrases. The sages note the irony of such a statement from a man who allegedly could defeat an entire nation simply by the power of his words. He intended on smiting all Israel with the power of his speech, but he needed to beat his donkey with a stick and wish for a sword to kill her. Numbers Rabbah, chapter 20, verse 14 says, "This villain was going to curse an entire nation which had not sinned against him, merely by the power of his words. Yet he has to smite his donkey with his hand to prevent it from going into the field." The donkey spoke to Balaam, saying, "You need a sword in your hand to kill me. How then do you intend to uproot an entire nation with only your words?" Balaam could not think of an answer, so he kept silent. That's a rabbinic paraphrase and commentary. The Midrash Rabbah also goes on to explain, "The Holy One, blessed be He, has consideration for the dignity of mankind, and knowing their weakness, He shut the mouth of beasts," generally speaking. For had they, that's the beasts, been able to speak, it would have been impossible to put them to the service of man or to stand one's ground against them. For here was this donkey, the most stupid of all beasts, and there was the wisest of all men, yet as soon as she opened her mouth, he could not stand his ground against her. So, what if animals could speak today? What would they say to us? This is what I've been thinking. I think they would rebuke us really severely. I mean, think of what we've done to so many species. We've wiped them right out. There's so many species that have gone extinct. What would animals say to us today if they could speak? Environmental destruction, habitat loss, species loss, foolish use of resources. Or what would a donkey say to us today? Well, in Job it says, "But ask the animals and they will teach you, or the birds of the air and they will tell you, or speak to the earth and it will teach you, or let the fish of the sea inform you. Which of these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? In his hand is life of every creature and the breath of all mankind. Does the ear test words as the tongue tastes food? Is not wisdom found among the aged? Does not long life bring understanding? To God belong wisdom and power. Counsel and understanding are his." And so we need to develop discernment and gain wisdom. We need to be careful to obey the Lord in all things. Let me just finish with the reading from Revelation. "To the angel of the Messianic community in Pergamon, write, here is the message from the one who has a sharp double-edged sword. I know where you are living and where the adversary's throne is, yet you are holding on to my name. You do not deny trusting me even at the time when the faithful witness Antipas was put to death in your town, there where the adversary lies. Nevertheless, I have a few things against you. You have some people who hold to the teaching of Balaam, who taught Balak to set a trap for the people of Israel so that they would eat food that had been sacrificed to idols and commit sexual sin. Likewise, you too have people who hold on to the teachings of the Nicolaitans. Therefore, turn from these sins. Otherwise, I'll come to you very soon and make war against them with the sword of my mouth. Those who have ears, let them hear what the Spirit is saying to the Messianic communities. To him winning the victory, I will give some of the hidden manna. I'll give him a white stone and on which is written a new name that nobody knows except the one receiving it." So the trick of Balaam is he couldn't curse Israel, but he did give Balak advice. He said, "Let your woman entice the Israelite men and let them seduce them." And by so doing, he brought a curse ultimately on Israel, because the Israelite men went off with the Moabite woman and in all sorts of sexual immorality. And that, in fact, brought destruction upon the nation of Israel. There was a plague, and I think about 24,000 Israelites died. So Balaam, at least Balak, got his wish in the end, but it was through the back door, which is a lesson to all of us, not just men here, but all of us, to be careful of sexual sin, because sometimes if Satan can't get you in other ways, he will get you in that way. And so we have to be vigilant as individuals and as a messianic community. Amen.